At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that video during the Biden administration when he was getting onto Air Force One and he was not taking any questions for months? Like, he was just MIA. And that one reporter was like, "Mr. President, President, please answer questions, Mr. President," and just screaming and it, like, would not stop. And he did not even turn around.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday, right? It's your new favorite podcast, so hit the follow button. Do it. Okay, so we got a lot of news today, a lot. Started off hot. Actually, probably it was percolating over the weekend before we even, like, woke up on Monday, because rumors were that Trump was going to beautify and deal with the crime situation in D.C.
Also, what crime situation in D.C.?
There is no crime situation.
We're just going to by reliable sources that it's the most beautiful of beautiful.
It is the most beautiful and safest. Beautiful and safest. Okay.
Yep.
So, and then, you know, there was also the news that he's going to be meeting with Putin in Alaska on Friday. Zelensky may or may not be there. I don't know. He might shove him in a closet for all we know. I have no idea. But point is that the week is due to have a lot of news. And even right now, while we're recording at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Caroline Leavitt is up at the White House podium. I'm keeping an eye on it, but I can only pay a little bit of attention to it. So what are we talking about today? We're going to talk about the DC takeover and also some developing news when it comes to Letitia James and Adam. What is his last? Shifty Schiff. I forgot his last name for a second. So, and if we have time, we are going to discuss some other things. First, we're going to start with a little, like, something fun, because we actually dabbled into this the last episode about the gilding of the Oval Office. Which I just have no words for it. All
it's
right.
A spectacle.
Well, it's starting to become, like, we're not the only one. Obviously, we're not the only ones having a conversation about it. It depends on who you're talking to. Some people have a conversation about it in the realm of, like, well, you know, he is within his right. He doesn't have, I mean, it's taste, or I don't really think they're subjective. I think it's objectively just bad taste. But
which is so interesting. I have so many thoughts.
Okay, well, let's start off with this clip where there was an actual news segment on the gilding of the Oval Office and how Trump is placing his mark on it.
The transformation has been gradual and unmistakable. Here's what it looked like in November when Trump visited Biden after the election. By February,
boring.
Some golden urns on the mantle. April, gold adornments appear on the walls. By July, it's gold everywhere. Just this week, more scaffolding popped up. Even more new gold trim appeared. The room where presidents have long struggled with the big decisions has never looked so golden. And have you seen the Rose Garden lately? Jackie Kennedy's creation. The grass has now been replaced with bright white paving tiles. You might call it the Rose Patio. The latest addition this week, umbrellas. Just like the ones on the patio at Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club in Palm Beach.
Yeah, there's a lot to say here. There's a lot.
There's a lot. And it's just like, I mean, you know, if you just want a close-up of what he has going on in the Oval Office.
That is objectively awful. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Really?
You don't like it? Do you like it?
Gosh.
No, it's just, what is, I don't understand. It's like, why is there a, like a Grecian column laid sideways? Like, at the top of the...
Well, that I think is already like the way... I think what he's doing, though, is...
He's just
that,
adding the gold on top of whatever's
correct.
Already there.
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
It's that's, like a craft project. It's like a craft project.
It is. It's very... And I don't understand all the addition of the medallions and the swirly things like on the door.
Like, it's really
what
bad.
What is that?
It's completely... And we don't have to think, like too deep into it, but it's kind of killing the whole vibe of like colonial America. And that's really,
oh, well, yeah.
Like, you know, I don't, it's like you wouldn't walk into Monticello and start throwing gold up on the wall. You know what I mean? It's not going to work.
It is. It's his home. It's his office. It clearly yeah. resembles, like, these are interior photos of his apartment in Trump Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, although I would say, even though I don't like this, this is better than the Oval Office is right
yes.
now.
Well, because it's all one thing. Like, this is a whole vibe. And the Oval Office is a vibe, but it's not that vibe. And so trying to, like, slap a new vibe on top of an existing vibe. You see what I'm saying? This is my question.
Yes.
This
what
is my
your
question? Okay, how does Melania have such good taste when it comes to her clothing? Because she, as objectively, like, I mean, pitch
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, she's very fashionable. Yeah.
Yes. And then allow this.
Well, I mean, I would be curious to see what the residents
I want to hear those conversations.
Like.
Yes. That, yes. Because I remember, like, during Christmas at, during their first administration, I remember thinking, like, oh, it looks nice at the White House during Christmas. This is nice, you know, and some of the stuff that Jill did, I'm sorry. I think even people who are fans of the Bidens just understood that it was a struggle for her to pick out outfits and to pick out Christmas ornaments. Like, it was. So what I want to know is, when he's talking to Melania, is she like, babe, I know you love the opulence. You love the gold, but we can scale back.
I think they very much, I mean, she's talked about it. They let each other kind of just like do their own things. And they'll, yeah. She's even said, like, there's sometimes that I don't agree with him, but, you know, Trump, you know what I mean? It's kind of, yeah. I think my curiosity is, what does the residence look like? You know, because that would be much more a reflection, I would think, of her taste versus what he does in the Oval Office for himself. So I don't know. We'll see what else. I'm very curious to see how the ballroom turns out, though.
I think it's also the type of gold detail. Like, it is so bright.
Yes.
Gold?
Yes. Yeah.
It's not like muted gold.
But like anything to that degree, it is everywhere. So I don't think it matters what color it is. It's just, it's hard on the eyes. And I'm still curious. I want
to
know, does he still have the dueling, like the tables on either side of the Resolute desk? Are those still there? Have they been added to or modified in any way? Do they have gold on them? And are the statues the same?
I would think that he cannot actually gild the statues themselves because those are historic pieces.
Yeah. Okay. So true.
Like, I don't think he's gilding the Resolute desk, for example.
I just feel like if it's not written in a constitution, I can totally see him being like, I can do it.
It's like,
it's within my power.
I can't.
Thank you for your attention to this matter. I'm going to do it. I do want to say about the patio, I'm not a fan of that.
When I'm seeing, I don't like it. It's too stark and it's too white. And I mean, it depends on like whether they get some flowers on the sides and stuff like that. But so far, I'm just like,
why?
No me gusta.
Just bring in some tables. Or they even, if they wanted to, they could have like kept the garden and brought in pavers and just put tables on top of the pavers because those can be easily removed and put back. If they want to and adjust it. And then you have the tables and a garden. But it just felt so like hard.
Like sterile. To me. It feels very sterile.
Very.
Didn't like it. Well, speaking of the beautification of the Oval Office, we also have to talk about the recent developments as in the beautification and the safety of Washington, D.C., of the entire city. He really is, which, you know, you can hate it, which I can see why. Or you can acknowledge
he's just looking at it almost like I see it as like it is his real estate host true self kind of coming through and wanting to improve, you know, DC and what he's doing to the White House and the ballroom, like the surrounding areas of DC. I think he kind of sees it as an extension because, I mean, he specifically said, I got to have this meeting with Putin and it's embarrassing that I got to go do that. So to get everybody.
I agree with him, though. Like, yeah, in that sense, this is our nation's capital. And as a person who's down there enough, it's not great. I mean, it's hard to get around. There's homelessness and encampments all over the place. You don't want to be down there at night. I have been, and in the early morning, and no me gusta, not safe. There's tons of crime all the time. Like half of the people in that press briefing yesterday, which we're going to talk about, all of them have even like had their cars vandalized or broken into, or they know someone who's been assaulted. Like that's just par for the course down there. And it has the opportunity to be really beautiful. And so I totally agree with him. Like this plus, and this might be something he's thinking too, we host tons and tons of foreign nationals. Yeah. Their embassies are there. And if they're continually coming to our country and we're not able to host them in like a hospitable, safe place, like that's, it's just an embarrassment.
Look.
It's a stain really on our country. And I'm just like, it doesn't take that much to curb crime. So I'm with him on that.
Yeah. Well, what he did was yesterday he announced that it was enough, especially after that the Doge employee who is referred to as Big Balls was assaulted in Washington.
Again, I had to explain that to my daughters while the news was on. Mommy, why is he called that? I'm like,
He decided, Trump decided to invoke Section 740 of the DC Home Rule Act, which is something that has not been done since the 1970s, and has basically federalized temporarily, which a lot of people don't discuss this, the DC Police Department. And in addition to that, he is also tasked, like, for example, Doug Burgum was at the press conference and announced, and I was like, why is.
Yeah, you were saying that's so weird. Why?
Of the interior. Well, because he is in charge of the National Park Police, and there's a lot of National Park in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
So it was literally all hands on board. I got a clip of the president making the announcement. Let's see what he has to say.
Our public safety crisis stems directly from the abject failures of the city's local leadership. The radical left city council adopted no cash bail. By the way, every place in the country where you have no cash bail is a disaster. That's what started the problem in New York, and they don't change it. They don't want to change it. That's what started it in Chicago. I mean, bad politicians started it, bad leadership started it, but that was the one thing that's central, no cash bail. Somebody murders somebody and they're out on no cash bail before the day is out. Now, we're going to end that in Chicago. We're going to change the statute. I spoke with Pam and Todd and everybody. We're going to change the statute, and I'm going to have to get the Republicans to vote because the Democrats are weak on crime, totally weak on crime. They don't know why they want to stop because they get mugged, too. But we're going to change no cash bail. We're going to change the statute and get rid of some of the other things. And we'll count on the Republicans in Congress and Senate to vote. We have the majority, so we'll vote.
So in addition to announcing what many of the Democrats are categorizing as the takeover, I've heard martial law used.
Oh, yeah.
You should have seen my TikTok last night. I mean, I'm so glad I did. We're on fire, okay?
Please tell me you don't understand, like, laws and the Constitution without telling me you don't understand laws and the Constitution. They get so mad. It's like, well, but it's a law. He's not breaking a law. Like, he actually has this authority. He actually has the power to do this. If you don't like it, as I've said 1,000 times, you're free to not like it. Go change it. Go talk to someone about changing it. Get the law taken away then.
Well, and there was a lot of discussion, or there has been a lot of casual conversation, let's say, of people who are freaking out about this, where they're, you know, making the argument that, well, if he's going to do it in D.C., what's going to stop him from doing it in other states? I'm like, well,
laws. Those still work.
What a lot of people do. The D.C. is federal. It is not a state. And even Mayor Bowser.
Muriel.
She was, yeah. She even, I said Miriam, didn't I? She even admitted to the fact that even though you could tell she was frustrated when she held some press conferences and stuff, that she has no other choice. Like this, it is written in the law, and he has the ability to do this up to 30 days before he has to go to Congress and ask for an extension. So until we get there, there's nothing illegal or unconstitutional that is happening. And you really can't, as of like, you, unless he does what happened in California, which is where he used the National Guard to protect, again, federal property. You can't see, you're not going to see this in other states. And specifically what he was mentioning there in that clip was exploring the idea of creating legislation that would, I don't know what his proposal is. I don't know if it's banding, limiting, restricting, putting in more parameters about the idea of no cash bail. But I mean, that is possibly something that can happen. I mean, think about past crime bills, especially in the 90s and stuff that passed. So he's completely within his right to do this, much to the chagrin and frustration of the Democrats.
And honestly, it's not even just like they're upset. It's a full-on meltdown. I had people come to my personal Facebook page and telling me this is harrowing. This should chill everybody to their bones. He's an authoritarian, a fascist. They're doing it again, you know? And it's just like, I'm sorry that Trump is happening to you. And I'm sorry that he is elected and doing things that presidents have been doing for a really long time. Like, just because this law hasn't been, or just because this particular power hasn't been used by him or another president for a long time, that doesn't mean that it's authoritarian to use it. Like, I'm sorry.
I find it very curious. That's often a discussion that happens. It's like, well, he goes and he digs up some antiquated law and I'm like, okay, you can criticize it. And then you can question it. I'm completely fine with that. Especially, you know, when there's times that something that from, I don't know, the 1840s, for example, was passed in response to something that was happening at the time, it's fair to question on whether or not that's something that we should be applying to today. But that doesn't take away the fact that it's still an existing law and he's still within his right to do it.
Correct.
And so I don't know, like, it's funny to me too, because they continue to be like, he's doing this unconstitutional thing or he's breaking the law, and he has yet to do anything unconstitutional. In fact, most recently, even the whole drama about the deportation of illegal migrants and that one Bosberg telling them that they had to turn the planes around, and he tried to hold the DOJ in contempt for not doing it or not following his order, that was overturned.
Yeah.
Because it's within the right of the administrative state, because it's part of the State Department.
Yes. I am sorry that laws are happening to you. I'm sorry that Trump is happening to you. But until he does something that is against the law and not you just being upset about him being the president, I really can't, I don't feel like we can have honest conversations. If someone was mad and was like, you know what, this law, I can see how its abuse could really turn into a real big problem, then we can talk about it. I can see that. But just kind of omitting the fact that we actually have laws, and so far they've worked for us and our country. Like, our Constitution and our laws have done good. It's like, I don't know, we can't have honest conversations.
No, they just really love to panic about it. And then not only are they panicking about things that aren't happening because they don't like it. It is that they don't like what's happening.
Right.
They're then having this knee-jerk reaction right now, which is one that I really don't get, about he is overstepping, or this is just him, I don't know, trying to be a fascist and take power, because there's really no crime happening in DC. Or it's not nearly as bad as he's trying to make it out to be. And I'm just kind of like, I feel like that is not the best strategy either, to just suddenly go, well, he's just overreacting because he wants to throw his power around. There's nothing really seriously bad happening in DC, which is objectively false.
Well, I love all the people that are telling me that nothing's happening in DC and are telling like all of their, you know, their followers that nothing's happening. And they live like in Wisconsin, or they live in I don't know, not here. Okay. Or they live in Oregon and they're like, it's all made up. And I'm like, when have you visited? Oh, you've never been to DC before. Okay. And yet, on the other hand, there's all these, even the newscasters here, and they are not necessarily Trump aligned, I'm pretty sure. They're even having a hard time delivering this headline without being like, yeah, it's kind of a problem. When they're showing the crime statistics, I mean, we actually have the numbers and they're having to deliver it. They can't be like, there's nothing to see here, because there's obviously things to see here. I mean, there was a shooting the other night. It's all the time. It's all the time.
There was a shooting yesterday, two blocks away from where there were protests happening.
Right. Okay? Yes.
Last night. And in addition to that, because a lot of things, they'll cite a few things. So they'll cite that crime is down like 30% compared to last year. What they don't bring up is that out of the top five most dangerous cities, mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. is fourth behind Memphis, St. Louis, and Baltimore. Right. Mind you, all Democrat-run cities.
Yeah.
So it's the fourth deadliest major city. Also, what they don't discuss is that there's been a significant increase in juvenile crime.
Yes. Which, it's like, Janine, it's little hoodlums running around and like beating people up. They're like these little youth gangs running around, and it's not safe. And anybody who's down there understands that, and they know it, and they take preventative measures themselves. And that's why I posted, I think, on Instagram yesterday. I was like, I cannot wait for all these journalists sitting in the press briefing room to have to go do their little write-ups and try and act and pretend like they're not super happy about this, because they all are. They have to be at the White House early and they have to be walking around DC late. They're afraid. All of them. They're all lying if they're acting upset about it.
There's actually, I have a clip of an ABC news anchor that was bringing this up, where she was, even though she, because I found a later clip of her speaking to Janine Pirro. Jeez, Janine Pirro, trying to claim that January 6th was horrible and that he wasn't really concerned about that. I'm like, please, that talking point is, first of all, apples and oranges doesn't apply. And we're
but
talking about,
like, let's be done with that. Like, put the nail in the coffin. Move on. Okay.
But she did share some information or some of her concerns about crime happening in DC. Let me see if I can pull up the correct clip.
We've been talking so much about the numbers, and yeah, usually that's how you play devil's advocate, is you talk about, oh, well, stats say crime is down. However, I can tell you firsthand here in downtown DC, where we work, right here around our bureau, just in the past 6 months, you know, there were two people shot, one person died, literally two blocks down here from the bureau. It was within the last 2 years that I actually was jumped walking just two blocks down from here. And then just this morning, one of my coworkers said her car was stolen a block away from the bureau. So we can talk about the numbers going down, but crime is happening every single day because we're all experiencing it firsthand while working and living down here.
Yeah, that should be. Well, and the other thing that hasn't been covered except by right-leaning news organizations or publications is, now the local news affiliate did talk about it, but it was the fact that there was a commissioner that was actually fired in mid-May for fudging the numbers, for fudging the crime stats. Let me see if I have the details here. It says his name was Commander Michael Pullman, 3rd District. He was Adams Morgan in Columbia Heights, was suspended for allegedly manipulating crime data. He downgraded violent offenses to lesser crimes to make statistics look better. In his testimony, he said officials often pressured officers to falsely like report the statistics to make the city appear safer, and that it wasn't an isolated incident. And in fact, that this type of cover up or this type of like fudging of crime numbers is something that happens often in major cities, especially when we're talking about politics and commissioners are dependent and are accountable to the mayor, and the mayor is giving them, because the mayor can fire them if they want to. So it's like, if you're not getting these numbers up, they can fire you. So there's been a lot of concern and discussion about the fact that not only was this commissioner, which this just happened in mid-May. I don't know. And I tried to
research this to see if those numbers had been updated, or the numbers that, and what I can't figure out is if what the numbers that the media is reporting are updated correct numbers, or if they are still reporting the numbers from this commissioner.
Yeah.
Which I think would matter. But regardless, the people in DC are having a different experience from what these numbers are claiming. And it's almost, again, like what happened with the Biden administration, where they're like, inflation isn't happening. The number says the economy is great.
I know.
And you're all like, but I'm paying like $20 for a dozen eggs.
But, and someone texted me today because I had shared like the protests that are now going on in DC. And he said, it's almost like they want to be unsafe. And I said, you know, I don't want to think too deeply about it, but what I see sometimes with progressives, especially like more the far leftist, you know, part of the party, it almost seems like they're so unhappy and unsettled in their self and in their circumstances that they just want other people to be unhappy and unsettled in their, you know, when you meet a miserable person and they just want you to also feel that, you know, I know you've met them. I mean, yeah, let's be honest. It's like, do you want to be like this? Because this isn't fun for you. It's not fun for me, you know?
Well,
I wonder if that's the case. Why else wouldn't you, again, it's because they don't want Trump to happen to them. But even with Biden, his administration could do things sometimes. And I was like, eh. That's like a net benefit for me.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
What I don't understand is, why don't they take advantage of the narrative right now? Why don't you go and say, you know what, you're right. In DC, for example, crime is an issue. People do feel unsafe. And even though maybe our numbers are better than they were last year, they're not good enough, and they're definitely not better than they were, I don't know, like 10 years ago. Like,
that
I
just
remember,
means they were horrible last year. Like, they were really bad last year. Doesn't mean they're good now.
This like very small window of being like, well, within the last year, I'm like, I don't think that's wise. Why don't you use this time and this narrative to work with the president and maybe get legislation and maybe be like, look, if we can work together and maybe you can give me some additional federal funding, I'll make sure that I can do this. You know what I mean? Like that kind of give and take, and take advantage of it at the time that it's happening, as opposed to just going, no. I don't like that. That's not true. You're a liar. And I'm just kind of like, but is he? And then, so I have this other one. So I was, you know, I'm looking things up. I'm curious about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And there's this news report that I found, a local news report from back July 21. And are you familiar with what an A, and I think it's ANC is in DC? I'm trying to remember if I'm... Okay, so apparently in Washington, D.C., every little like town or district or like subsection of Washington, D.C. has like this community person that helps like create relationship and advocate for safety in the district. I'm trying to remember what they're called. They're called an advisory neighborhood commission. And it's something that you run for. It's supposed to be non-political. And what they do is they try and create relationships between the government and the constituency, and just kind of like play a liaison specifically when it comes to neighborhood safety. So this guy, I cannot remember his name. He, McKierney, I think was the last name. So he is in this segment. This is July 21. He is the ANC, and he is talking about the issue of crime in this area. And they also speak to that district's commissioner, where he says, but crime is down. And pay attention to what someone who is doing this like safety walk, they walk around and ask for things to be safe. I don't get it, but let's watch it.
From drug deals,
had a shooting here 2 days ago,
to bullets flying not far from where kids were playing at the Kennedy Rec Center.
What can we do to make sure that it's safe for the kids?
Neighbors from the Shaw, Mount Vernon Square, and Mount Vernon Triangle neighborhoods say they're fed up.
In the past 4 weeks, we've had 3 shootings.
Stephen McCarty is the ANC for the area. He organized this week's public safety walk.
We need to bring everyone together because this is happening here.
On hand to hear their concerns, D.C. Police 3rd District Commander Sean Connors.
And I can tell you right now, we have less shootings here than we had at this point.
He told them that by the numbers, crime is down. In fact, D.C. police say crime is down across the entire city.
Does anyone here actually think that?
But if you ask these D.C. neighbors,
it shows such a lack and disconnect between what you're trying to sell versus what we're experiencing.
Their perception, how they feel, is unsafe.
That was July 21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because so I was like, what has changed?
Where is this? Like, when was this report? When did this happen? It was like a few weeks ago. That same ANC now on his social media, like I went to his X page, which, by the way, this video was starting to be shared by other right-leaning, you know, or people are just kind of pointing out, you're not crazy. Like, we're not crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways, he is trying to organize to oppose the takeover of DC.
It's like, make it make sense.
It makes perfect sense.
When you don't like who's in the office, you'll just oppose everything, even if it's a net good for you, which is like, it's like self-defeating. It's so weird. Like, oh my gosh, I don't know. What I do know is I have tons of people that I love and are close to DC, and they have experienced violence and crime, and they're very pleased about it. And it's not just conservatives. So
it's CNN
telling us that don't look, because it's a fiery but mostly peaceful, you know, protest that's going on behind me with everything aflame, but it's peaceful. They're doing it again.
The other talking point that I've seen, of course, is, which I saw on MSNBC, which we can watch if you want, because they had Mayor Bowser on. And of course, the reason that this is happening is because this is a city of mostly Black and brown people.
Right.
And that most of the cities that the administration is targeting are Black and brown cities. And I'm like, do we ever consider that maybe it's because most of these cities are Democrat run cities that are running the city into the ground? And it has nothing to do with them being Black or brown or minorities or Latino or whatever. The problem is the policies that are being used by these Democrat-run cities. In fact, those top 5 cities that I mentioned before, so it was Memphis, St. Louis, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and Birmingham, Alabama. All of them have been run by Democrats.
Of course.
Washington, D.C. has never had a Republican.
Right.
I think Memphis hasn't had one since the 40s, and the other two hasn't had a Republican mayor since the 60s.
Right.
So I know at least, I'm not 100% sure about Birmingham, but I know at least the top 4 have all been, especially Washington, D.C., has always been a Democrat mayor. They have never had a Republican.
No, the party refuses to acknowledge when there's a through line. And there has been a through line. And even during, you know, COVID, the states that had the most draconian rules, the ones that were to the detriment of the children that now have years of learning loss, those were all Democrat-run cities, too.
One of the wildest things, I heard a stat right before we got on, that Washington, D.C. has like 40% of their students are like excessive violators of truancy, which means that they have missed at least a minimum of 10% of the school year.
That's crazy.
So they're like, what are they doing if they're not in school? Which is maybe part of the problem.
They are doing bad things. They're punching people out. They're breaking into cars.
Before we move on to the next section or next segment, I wanted to play, because that presser that where Trump announced this was packed.
It was.
And it was probably the most attended presser that has happened for ages. And of course, also, it was a big deal because it was in the White House press briefing room. And typically, the president doesn't, you know, he has his press conferences, you know, somewhere outside his office or something like that, or maybe in the Rose Garden or whatever. So it was a big deal that he was
calling everybody over to the White House press briefing room. And even though we have seen the media's reaction since this announcement, can we acknowledge that he still has this primarily left-leaning press mm-hmm. laughing along with him?
And yeah, because he's funny. He's
like
just
a good
funny.
Time.
Yes. He baits them too. Like, he is just a jovial person. There's not these people who say he's super like hateful and stuff. Like, just observe him. He was just laughing with them and teasing, and they were laughing too. And I could tell they wanted to laugh more. But you know that some, like when they asked someone to clap for Caroline Leavitt or something, people are like, you know, whatever. Yeah. They didn't want to do that. But he's just a good time.
Well, this is when he was bringing up Caroline Leavitt and the topic of the ballroom and the White House press briefing room, like, comes up.
I've never seen any. Where's Caroline? Where's my superstar? Caroline. Is Caroline in the back? Where's Caroline? Come here, Caroline. Come here, Caroline. Come here. Is she doing a good job, by the way? Come here. Is this the largest crowd you've ever seen?
This is definitely the most packed briefing, and I think all of you would agree. I think it's why we need to build a ballroom.
Yes!
I have a better idea.
No seats.
All right, Brian, go ahead.
My question is this. You're building the big, beautiful ballroom.
Yeah.
Could we build a big, beautiful briefing room of technology?
Yeah.
More seats.
I don't want to do that. I don't want you to be comfortable.
I love it. I thought that was fun.
It's like bizarre. It's bizarro world. Like,
I know.
Like in a surreal kind of way.
I know. I love it. You know what it reminded me of? Do you mm-hmm. remember that video during the Biden administration when he was getting onto Air Force One and he was not taking any questions for months? Like, he was just MIA. And that one reporter was like, Mr. President, please answer our questions, Mr. President, and just screaming and it, like, would not stop. And he did not even turn around. And it was loud and long. And she just was like, I'm going for it. That was what I thought of yesterday, because they were all jockeying to get a question in. And it was so loud and so packed. It was great.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny. Well, speaking of the media and their stories and the stories they like to cover and they don't like to cover.
Right.
Have you been at all following what's happening with Letitia James and also Adam Schiff?
So I should be, because I work in this business, but I feel like it kind of came out a little bit later yesterday, like the meaty stuff, you know, and then Cash Patel tweeted and stuff. And I'm just going to be honest, like, my brain switches to
off at like 6 o'clock.
Like, I need to go to bed because I'm up so dang early. So please fill me in. I'm trying to at least push my open window of usefulness until like 8:30 or 9. But I mean, yeah.
You're failing.
I'm not doing well.
The biggest story that dropped yesterday was an exclusive from Just the News, which was about Adam Schiff. And allegedly, there is evidence that a whistleblower says that Adam Schiff was leaking classified information to the press in order to undermine Trump during his first administration, which we all basically knew.
Not surprising.
He was like, what? I don't know, no whistleblower. Like, there's multiple times where there were rumors of this whistleblower, but there was no confirmation that this whistleblower existed. However, the entire situation, because it's actually Letitia James. Let me start from the top, okay? Because let me go back. Because it actually started a few weeks ago. So Adam Schiff and Letitia James. Now, if you don't remember who Letitia James is, she is the AG of New York. And she is the one that prosecuted Trump and New York City for New York City. I think actually she's in this. Is she the AG? Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she prosecuted Trump for, it was like, basically mortgage fraud is what she was trying to, or lending fraud was what she was trying to claim. So she was saying that he was blowing up his numbers and the values of his property in order he can get better terms on his loans, and that was fraud. However, in that case specifically, who he was doing business with had no issues with him whatsoever, never complained, never filed, and there was no victim in that case. Now, both Adam Schiff and Letitia James right now are facing possible mortgage fraud scandals. At the same time that Letitia James was targeting Trump, trying to make sure that he couldn't run for office again, she and her case is in Virginia. So a Virginia grand jury, and if you're unfamiliar, Ed Martin has been designated as the special prosecutor in this. Mm-hmm. Ed Martin, they attempted, I think, to appoint him to, I think it was the D.C. Yeah, and where Pirro is right now. So mm-hmm. it was supposed to be originally Ed Martin, but they couldn't confirm him, so he withdrew. And so now the administration has made him the special investigator for Letitia James' case. And I believe also maybe Adam Schiff's, but I'm not 100% sure. But the fraud alleges that she misrepresented and claimed that her father was her husband so she could qualify for better mortgage loan terms. She incorrectly listed a Norfolk, Virginia property as her primary residence while she was New York. I'm sorry. Norfolk, Virginia. Yes. While she was AG of New York. So clearly she's living in New York, but she's claiming that this Virginia property is her primary because, again, that gives you more favorable terms. Now,
Casey,
purchases-
don't you remember all the Democrats being super mad at RFKJ for having different residents? I mean, that was like a scandal for a week that everybody was talking about. Like, he's a liar.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. It's like, oh, you mean that well, happens on all both
this,
sides of the aisle?
She's like, she's getting this loan while in 2023 while she's going after Trump.
Yep.
Okay. Then, in addition, Schiff, who was a representative and is now a senator, during the time that he was a representative, he claimed a Maryland property as his primary residence from 2003 to 2019.
Wow.
While he actually, his primary residence had to be in California. He had a condo. He had a house in Maryland, a condo in California, but as a representative of California, he had to have a primary residence in California. So you can't claim the Maryland home. Now he's like, oh, it was my secondary home. My family was there. The kids were going to school. But he did it from 2003 to 2019. And then when he was coming up to run for senator, he changed it.
Hmm. It's almost like he knew what he was doing was wrong.
Oh, perhaps. Now, again, also, this is the entire time that he's alleging that Trump is a criminal.
Right.
Okay. So he is also, I think, yes. So the special attorney, Ed Martin, is also in charge of this case. And that venue is a Maryland case. So these, mm-hmm. both of these, I think they can face up to 30 years on both of these mortgage fraud cases.
Can you imagine?
Well, and this is what's wild is, I mean, it's not surprising, but we went through 4 years of trying to prosecute Trump, of mm-hmm. messing, you know, like even with the Alvin Bragg case where they keep saying that he has 37 felonies or whatever.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that those felonies are like line items in a ledger because they finagled with the law and took something that had like gone past the statute of limitations and tied. Yeah. Like it was completely convoluted. Mm-hmm. And I think if I'm not mistaken, that was going through the appeals process.
Yeah.
And so the Letitia James case where he was found guilty of having committed fraud and was fined like almost $500 million, I think it was what.
Yeah.
He's also appealing that.
Yeah.
And
so what's going to happen is nothing's going to happen to Trump. At all.
And these guys are
going to end up going to jail for a couple decades. I mean, this is my question about this. And again, it's a simple question. Call me stupid. But like when you go into this line of work, when you're a public facing person,
dude, I don't know.
Don't they know that their stuff is going to be scrutinized? Like everything you do, someone will find out about it and they'll talk about it. And if it's illegal, you're going to get in trouble. Do they just think no one's going to ever check my personal records, my property records, my social media, the people I associate with? Do they think that just no one's going to care that much?
It's just a complete lack of I don't know if it's like hubris.
It's hubris.
Yeah. That's what it has they to think be. Like, oh, nobody's going to look at me. I'm in a Democrat run, you know, town. I'm the AG. Who's going to investigate me in New York? Like,
well, but... coming for you. Coming for you.
Well, okay, so then they have that in common. They have both committed mortgage fraud, allegedly, to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Things remain to be seen. It's being investigated. Yep. But these are the allegations. Well, in addition to that, let's see. Letitia James is being investigated for the DOJ has launched an investigation on her on whether she had violated Trump's constitutional rights during the fraud investigation, specifically, especially focusing on the fact that she campaigned on wanting to find him. Like she was, I have clips, okay? I have clips here where this is her. This is a compilation of Letitia James saying, I'm going to prosecute Trump while she was campaigning, before she was AG, and she even had any knowledge of whether or not there would be any kind of case.
She's basically telling them, I'm going to go on a witch hunt on your behalf. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. Let's go ahead and let's see what Letitia or Big Tish has to say.
I will say to people who say, oh, I'm not going to bother to register to vote because my voice doesn't make a difference, or I'm just one person.
I say one name, Donald Trump. That should motivate you. Get off your ass and vote.
Will you sue him for us?
Oh, we're going to definitely sue him. We're going to be a real pain in the ass. He's going to know my name personally.
I love it. He probably does already.
He built his wealth off the backs of New Yorkers.
We need to focus on Donald Trump and his abuses. We need to follow his money. We need to find out where he's laundered money. All of those transactions have happened here in New York City. Tell this president and every other individual that no one is above the law.
I said the bottom line is that residents from Brooklyn who are going to really make the difference are energized. Individuals from the city are energized. Individuals who care about statewide issues are energized. Individuals who care about, again, going after Donald Trump, this illegitimate governor, president.
Running for attorney general because I will never be afraid to challenge this illegitimate president when our fundamental rights are at stake.
A legal system where even the most powerful in the country cannot use a loophole to evade justice.
We must do our job to ensure that the man currently occupying the Oval Office is held accountable to any and everything he has done.
So that was Tish promising that she was going to prosecute Trump before he even had, like, she had no case on him, okay?
No.
So now she's being investigated to see if she, it's specifically, this is the term, grand jury is convened in Albany to investigate deprivation of rights. Because she, I mean, it's a constitutional violation. You as an attorney, you go and find someone, you can determine that they're guilty before you can even, and then you make a case against them, especially if there was no actual victims. You know, and a lot of things, I don't know if our listeners know this, but she visited the White House multiple times while she was conducting this investigation. Why is she visiting the White House while she's investigating the opponent, or who was at the time to be perceived to be the opponent of Biden, who was still planning on running for president? So,
you know what? With Letitia James, too, there's a lot of people that do, like, you know, skeevy stuff, nefarious, you know, dealings with other people that I just don't like. But there's something about her. She is irrationally angry about Donald Trump. And I don't, like, I've never seen her. She just feels so dark and upset, like, in her soul. Just, and about him. Like, why?
Well, and then finally, best for last, is now this was something that broke last night that I dabbled into today, and I'm probably going to look into more later today because I like this kind of stuff. So the outlet Just the News had an exclusive, and they're like, look, we got access of these documents, or I can't remember exactly if they got access to us or if they knew about it, but then Kash Patel ended up declassifying this memo. And so it was an HPSCI staffer, which is, I think, a House. Oh, I can't remember what that acronym stands for. This staffer is an FBI whistleblower. And they were a Democrat that reported to Schiff and who claims that Schiff approved classified information to be leaked over the entire pretty much 4 years that Trump was president in order to undermine his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during a specific meeting that the plan was to leak this information that was derogatory to Trump, and that Schiff stated the information would be used to indict President Trump. So that was his plan. He's like, let me leak this information, mm-hmm. get it into the news. It'll trigger an investigation, and then we'll be able to use this to either indict or impeach Trump. The staffer pointed out it was illegal, and people within the staff, including mm-hmm. Schiff, was like, don't worry, we're not going to get caught. And he got really upset. He says it was unethical, of course. Went and informed, did his whistleblowing to the FBI, and it got buried.
Wow.
Which is why we're not hearing about it until now. And by the way, so I read some of this document. There was a few things that stood out to me. One, Adam Schiff thought he was going to be appointed as director of the CIA if Hillary Clinton won.
I saw that and I was like, wow, that's wild. I don't even think Hillary Clinton thought that. Like, I think it's cute that, I mean, maybe she did, but Adam Schiff, like,
I don't know. I was like, that's,
I mean, if he's got enough hubris that we've talked about, like all these other people, Letitia James, you know, to think he's not going to get caught when one of his staffers was like, maybe we shouldn't do this. It's illegal. And they're like, that's fine.
No,
like,
don't worry about it.
Maybe he really did think he was going to be the director of the CIA.
Well, and then in addition, not only was it Schiff that's implicated in this, but apparently Eric Swalwell was also assisting in these leaks.
Yeah,
and
totally
so the strategy, and I read when I skimmed the documents, there was a few things that stood out to me. One thing was that the staffers were using the phones of the staff's like spouses
mm-hmm.
to contact either someone who had a direct connection to a journalist,
mm-hmm.
so it wouldn't connect back to the staffer or to Adam Schiff.
Mm.
So they were trying to, like, I guess basically launder and cover themselves.
Because they knew they were lying and it was illegal.
They're leaking the information, correct. So this is something that, now, here's the deal with this. I think this was from, it says, timeline, FBI interviews of the whistleblower were from 2017 to 2023.
Wow.
Spanning multiple leak incidents. So I don't think statute of limitations is going to be an issue on this one. Is number one.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I'd be sweating right now if I was him.
This is like legitimately illegal.
Yeah.
This isn't just like questionably, or it's not like, for example, the declassification, like, for example, the whole Obama, you know, the claim of Obama and Hillary Clinton
mm-hmm.
and Clapper and Comey with the memos and the documents have been declassified by DNI Gabbard. Mm-hmm. There's debate there of like, what exactly is the law that you broke? You know, is it a conspiracy? Was it treasonous? It doesn't really come up to treason. Then there's the question of statute of limitations.
Yeah.
There's no question what the problem is here.
This guy is going to jail.
So I am very interested in this one because I don't even understand. You used to live in California.
Yes.
How did Adam Schiff become senator?
I have, like, no idea.
Is it because
we have tons of unlikable elected officials in California? I mean, Kamala Harris. Hi. Gavin Newsom. Hello. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger was like our governor for a while. Like, and I don't dislike him necessarily. I'm just saying we have this like penchant for electing bizarre people. And Adam Schiff is like creepy kind of.
He feels like snaky.
He feels icky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he is. So,
I mean, yeah. Granted.
We're going to see what's
going to happen. Let me ask you a question here, because I've seen this discussion happen a few times. I'm just curious what you think.
Yeah.
So, of course, we saw the weaponization of the DOJ against Trump. Yep. There's no question that that happened. It happened during his first term, and it happened during the 4 years that he was out, most aggressively during the 4 years that he was out. And a lot of time, you know, now there's a talking or a conversation happening about, like, is this him retribution against his harshest critics, Letitia James and Adam Schiff? Is this vengeance? Is this, or, you know, maybe even if, which I think this is kind of crazy, but like, let's say even if they did do something wrong,
mm-hmm.
should should the administration pursue investigating them and possibly trying them, because it looks like it could be retaliatory, and well, it just isn't good for the Republic, which I think is ridiculous. No, but I'm just asking.
I think that so I know how you feel. I think that a proper legal system and a well-working DOJ should try any person who is being unlawful in their actions. I think that that's obviously what they're supposed to do. I think that if it's pretty obvious that you have committed an alleged crime, it's their responsibility. So I don't care if someone wants to, you know, like categorize it as vengeance. It's not vengeance to bring justice to a person who is breaking the law. Even, I mean, especially if there are elected officials and they're doing that. So, I mean, if people want to say what he's doing is retaliatory, I mean, I suppose, but they broke the law, like literally broke the law. And I don't see him going and doing this to, like, there's so many people who hate Trump and who tried to come after Trump. And he's not doing that for everybody. But these people are, like, specific. It's very obvious what they've done. And I don't think that if they broke the law, they should go to jail.
Well, and I think it's very different to what we saw happen with Trump, especially during the 4 years that he was out. You know,
right.
We saw cases that were passed on, and then, right. you know, Alvin
well, because
Bragg
nothing made sense. It didn't make sense to anybody because it wasn't clear, because they were trying to cook up something that didn't exist. And this very clearly exists. She's done and what he's done. I mean, it's on paper. It's very
allegedly.
I don't want to get us in any trouble, but no, I don't think it's retaliatory. I think that they broke the law and justice should be served. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I'm very interested in these because
you need to write. I can see that you're going to write a post. I can feel it. Yes.
It's like, especially I haven't gotten into this memo.
Mercedes going to write a post for all of us who are like, just put him in jail.
Okay. All right. Well, before I wrap us up, I want to play a clip for you.
Okay.
Of J.D. Vance, because he's talking about one of your favorites.
Oh, good.
I just want to see your reaction and your thoughts on this. Okay. This is an interview that he did with
Stephen Miller's wife, Katie.
Stephen Miller's wife. What is her first name? Is
Katie.
It Stephanie? Katie.
Katie.
Okay. So Katie Miller now has a podcast, because everybody has a podcast now. Why not? Right?
Yeah. But she got to interview J.D. Vance. She's a VIP. Whatever.
Yeah. Rachel was very upset about this. She actually DM'd me and she's like, she just got a podcast and she's interviewing the vice president. And I'm like, she's married to one of his top advisors.
That's not the point.
All right. Well, this one, it was a fun little segment that she did with him.
President Trump said that you would likely be the heir apparent to MAGA.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. and he said Marco would be involved some way, somehow. So we'll go down some Marco questions.
Oh,
what's
God.
The most surprising thing you've learned about Marco?
He also has a sweet tooth, which, you know, he's in great shape. He works out, but he can, I mean, howls ice cream to the point where half the time that I see Marco in the hallway, it's because he's just been down to the Navy mess in the White House and he's gotten a bunch of ice cream.
Marco Rubio is known as a funny jokester. What's the funniest joke he's told you? Or the funniest moment you've had with him?
Okay, so you guys will have to determine whether we can actually put this in the final. We were talking about something very serious related to the Middle East, and he starts this joke totally deadpan. He's like, you know, I learned something interesting about the Middle East because I had a constituent call a few years ago when I was in the Senate, and a woman was visiting Israel, and her husband died while they were in Israel. And I was like, oh, man, that's terrible. And she was trying to get help from us for how to get the body back to the United States. And she said to me, you know, man, I don't know. Maybe I don't want it back. The last time somebody the last time somebody died over here, they rose from the dead 3 days later. And I didn't know until the very end that it was a totally bullshit joke. I was like on the edge of my seat, like, what happened with this poor woman and her husband?
He's got
so
a good
first of all,
of
I thought it was funny that he ratted Rubio out as,
I know.
As like a consumer or a hoarder of ice cream.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just unfair that men can do that, like eat ice cream every day and still be in shape or not be like fat. We can't do that. I'm an old lady now. I have ice cream one time during the week and maybe some chips and salsa, and I can't fit into my pants on Sunday for church. Like, unfair, first of all. But I do think it's cute. And I think that Marco Rubio actually has a pretty good sense of humor. I've seen him in some interviews when he's trying to like break the ice or you know, he's got a good sense
of humor. Even made a joke of himself because he's like, I got four jobs now.
Yeah. he's good natured. He really is.
Yeah. So I thought it was an interesting, and also to see like the dynamic that it looks like that potentially Vance and Rubio have, especially as, you know, a lot of people are talking about them as the future of the party.
Great. Yes.
Time will tell.
Yes.
Rachel's like, absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely.
I think
I will campaign.
Although you would prefer that it's switched. It's Rubio at the top of the party.
Yeah. Don't see him being like, yeah, I'll be your VP. I just don't. I think for him, he's so well suited to Secretary of State. And I think that once he's done with that role, I don't feel like he's a VP type.
Maybe. I don't see it either to take, and especially to go from Secretary of State to then Vice President.
Right.
Like, honestly, Vice
can
President.
Can you do, maybe he could do a second term as Secretary of State.
Yeah, there's no term limit because it's appointed. Yeah. There's no term limit on Secretary of State. So he could be Vance's Secretary of State, which I think
makes
a lot more sense.
I don't know how you do that with children. I don't know how he's doing it now. Like, it's just wild to me. That's 8 years off your life, off your kids' lives, because you know he's not getting home at five.
Well, I mean, think about Vance, because Vance has, because Rubio has teenagers, but Vance has little kids.
Babies.
And he's VP to potentially be president, and he could even
be president. 8 years.
8 years? That's his entire career, and that's the entire childhood
of his children.
His kids.
I know. I think about that a lot. People are like, you should get into politics. I'm like, well, I have kids, and I would never see them, nor would I ever sleep, and I wouldn't see my husband.
So bad at politics because this, my face.
Doesn't lie. Doesn't lie. And you would literally never remember anyone's name.
I would jack up every name of every diplomat.
It would be horrible.
Every
leader. You would need someone like me walking behind you with like the post-it notes. Like, this is this person's name.
See, this is why you need to, because I'm about to make a reference to Veep and I can't make it because you haven't watched the show.
I haven't watched it. Sorry. I haven't. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, that's it. No more podcasts. Anyways, okay, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button because we are here every Tuesday and Thursday. So you don't want to miss an episode because, I mean, this was like the best hangout you've had probably in the last 48 hours. Let's be honest. So make sure you hit a follow button. You can follow us on Instagram too if you want up-to-date breaking news. If you want this episode and every episode and our archive ad-free, in addition to video, please consider becoming a paying supporter. There is a link in the show notes with a discount code. I would take advantage of that now. And I have the to-do list that I have right now to try and get us going in addition to the rest of my life is excessive.
Enough.
And I need to take care of. So it's coming, you guys. All right. That's it. That's all we have. And we're out. Thank you so much. And here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit MidAmerica shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the Board of Directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.